Korzenowski in for Chad Hartman, joined by Chip Scoggins as he visits with Chad every Monday. And it's not like we have anything to talk about after what happened yesterday, Chip. Where do you want to start? Because the Lynx did their usual, let's diddle around for a half and then stomp somebody. And then the Vikings did what we all knew they would do, which is score 48 points and bury the Bengals. So which one do you want to start with?
Yeah, let's start with the Vikings. Obviously, what happened there, like there's some historic things happen that, you know, it's the beauty of sports, Corzo, right? You show up to a stadium, you never know what you're going to see. You may see something historic, and yep, we did yesterday.
And how about that Brian Flores, that's the first guy that he had spotted him, knew about him, and you say, why? Well, of course, he's in the NFL coaching. He knows him. And yesterday, for those of us that didn't know Isaiah Rodgers, we'll never forget Isaiah Rodgers because he looks like the kind of guy that this isn't a fluke. I mean, he's really fast. He's great at punching the ball. He had a great defense pass with T. Higgins in the corner of the end zone. I mean, the guy can play, and he's fast, and he's the real deal, it looks like.
Yeah, and I remember listening to Brian Flores back in training camp. He was talking about his corner situation because, you know, a lot of us had concerns about their depth there and there's some unknowns. And, you know, Isaiah Rodgers has been in the league, but it's not like he's been a decorated player. I mean, he's been a part-time starter. I think he started maybe half the games that we played for Indianapolis 1 year. But, you know, he was a backup depth guy in Philadelphia last year. And so wasn't really sure, like, what kind of player he was. But Flo said, you know, he's followed Isaiah Rodgers back from college and was aware of him and really felt like his skill set would fit nicely with his scheme and what they asked for corners to do. And boy, we saw it. I mean, he's been good, you know, obviously early on, but then yesterday, just the playmaking and the ability to knock the ball out, to punch the ball out on a guy on the run and be able to recover it, and pick it up and return it for a touchdown is just incredible. And it just felt like every time he was around the ball, he was going to create a turnover. So obviously that took a lot of burden and a lot of pressure off the offense. Yes. And with Carson Wentz coming in there, it completely shifted the game. And once they got up big, you know, they were just going to run the ball and bleed the clock. And I think the Bengals did some of that in the second half too. They knew the game was over, but so it removed some of the burden, maybe some of the, I don't know if tension is the word, but just the, you know, everything that was swirling around with their quarterback situation. So, yeah, he looks like a fine for Brian Flores, who's done this, you know, a couple times since he's been here in terms of identifying personnel he wants to bring in.
Yeah, no, Dave and I were talking during the first segment when I talked about the Vikings, is that the other thing that we really noticed yesterday is that I think you can make an argument that the most important player on this team is not Justin Jefferson, it's not J.J. McCarthy, it is Christian Darrisaw. Because the difference between Christian Darrisaw and the guys that are behind him is gargantuan. Yesterday, Trey Hendrickson never got a whiff of the quarterback. If Scoob had been playing or somebody else, he probably would have had four sacks. I mean, that guy is irreplaceable right now because we have no good back. The Vikings have no good backups for him, and he's the most important guy, and he looked fantastic yesterday.
It's amazing how it changed, huh?
Yes.
It's just everything. Yeah, I mean, if he's not number one, he's in the top three for sure.
Yep.
In terms of importance. And I think it was good. Sounds like he's ahead of schedule. You know, we were waiting to see when he would come back, but he talked yesterday afterwards about being ahead of schedule. And yeah, it just solidified the line. And, you know, the protection, look at the way they ran the ball, putting him next to Donovan Jackson. I mean, that's a powerful 1-2 punch there. I mean, I thought Jackson played good in the run game. So, yeah, I mean, the fact that with him coming back, you shored up a major, major problem that we saw in the first two games. And to me, those are the takeaways where you saw you could put Carson Wentz in there, and he looked calm. He looked like he'd been running the offense. He knew where to go. I think KO's comment about him being a point guard, I think that's the perfect description of what we saw from Carson Wentz yesterday. And oh, by the way, they get Jordan Addison back this week, and he had probably the best training camp of anybody on offense, so that's going to be a big lift for them. So yeah, but I mean, just having Darrisaw back and knowing you don't have to worry about that side of the line was such a, I think, relief for them.
And I watched almost every snap. I watched Christian Darrisaw, and he would step back, he'd plant that left foot, and Trey Hendrickson could not get away from him. I mean, you would have thought Trey Hendrickson was the third string defensive end when we all know he's one of the best defensive ends in the league. And the other thing that the announcers brought up, you know, they actually had Nance and Romo yesterday, and that Romo brought up, he says the fact that you don't need to have a T.J. Hockenson in chipping the right end when you had a Scoobel in there or a Brandell in there, that gave him more freedom to run routes and have a better game. And plus, I think Carson Wentz certainly was going to go to his tight ends. He threw both of his touchdowns to the tight ends. Carson Wentz was... It was funny watching that game yesterday because he certainly doesn't throw what I would call a good-looking ball. It kind of is fluttering, but it gets where it's supposed to go. He throws it on time. He had one really bad throw that could have led to an interception when he threw it behind a Naylor going across the middle. But other than that, he was, the one that he threw up for down into the corner of the end zone where I forget which receiver it was. I think it was Thielen almost got
Thielen it. On the diving one, yeah.
But that was an okay throw because don't throw it short. It would have been picked off. Throwing it a little long, you're okay. So he can be the quote unquote point guard. I like that better than game manager, and he will do it. It'll be interesting to see. We heard that their JJ McCarthy is going to go on the trip. So I mean, I don't know what that means. If all of a sudden JJ gets healthy, would they maybe let him play against the Browns? And the Browns defense, by the way, is the real deal. I mean, they certainly shut down the Packers yesterday. But what do you think about that? Do you think it's Carson Wentz's job as long as he's winning? Or do you think that they'll bring JJ back once he's healthy?
Well, I think it's and the way O'Connell explained it yesterday is he just kind of said at the end of the question, at the end of his press conference, he said, talking about Wentz, and he said he's going to get another opportunity. And, you know, the follow-up question is, I mean, is that he's going to start? And he said, he said JJ's ankle is responding well to treatment. But he's a young guy who's mobile, and he said, we're going to do right by him. So they're not going to rush him back. He acknowledged that it's a high ankle sprain. We know those things tend to take several weeks at a minimum. So I think you just let it play out and see how it goes. If they're winning and the offense is functioning like it did yesterday and or even better now that, you know, you're getting Addison and you're winning, I don't think they're going to mess with that formula. But I think it really is honestly a case by case and just kind of see how it's going parallel to what JJ's recovery looks like. So I think you just let it play out, honestly.
And with the way the defense looks, they're going against Jake Browning, but you know, the last time we played Jake Browning, although that's when we had what I like to call Ed Onatel, because there was no D in his last, there was no D in his game. You know, we had the great Nick Mullins, Jake Browning shootout game. Remember that in 2023?
Yeah.
I mean, both those guys throw a lot of interceptions, but Jake Browning usually doesn't look this bad. So I got to give the Vikings, I mean, he's a gunslinger, just like Nick Mullen was, but he couldn't even get rid of the ball yesterday. I mean, that was a destruction. Now, on the upcoming games, the Steelers do not have a good defense, okay? They do not have a good defense, but the Browns have a really good defense. So I think of the two games overseas, the one I'm more worried about is the Browns. We saw they beat the Packers yesterday. The Browns are such a good defensive team that they can keep them in the game, and so we'll see what happens. Are you going on that trip, Chip?
I am not. My colleague Jim Suhan's going. I'm curious to see. I mean, this is the first team that's gone over for 2 weeks, right?
Yep.
So I'm curious to see what, if any, effect that has. You know, once they, I think they're leaving Thursday, and then so it's not quite 2 full weeks. But I'm just kind of curious to see, you know, if there is any effects on him on that. But, I think it was interesting, the reaction. You could tell they felt good about the way they played yesterday and just felt like they got back to some of the things that are their identity. And I do think running the ball, Corzo. I mean, the way they ran the ball with Jordan Mason is a big development.
I mean, 2 rushing touchdowns, and he went in from the 5. It was like, what team am I watching? I've never seen that. It's pretty amazing. By the way, I kind of like that the Vikings – by volunteering to play these 2 games in a row, those are 2 games that would have been road games that instead are at neutral site games. And so I think that's a good little edge to not be, you know, you're not going to be facing as many terrible towels as you would otherwise. We're going to keep it for another segment. Is that okay, Chip? And when we come back, we can talk about the Minnesota Lynx who end up winning easily, but it's never as easy as it looks. Korzanowski in for Hartman for another 40 minutes or so. We're still joined by Chip Scoggins of the Star Tribune. And yesterday, Chip was at U.S. Bank Stadium. I'm guessing, did you have a chance to either tape and watch the Lynx game or see what or get a chance to review it?
I didn't get a chance to tape it. I tried to follow a little bit while I was writing, checking Twitter and the score and all that. But sounds like a typical Lynx game when they turn their defense on. That's the difference maker.
It really is. And Cheryl is, you know, the winningest coach in WNBA history. And obviously, if she's not in the Hall of Fame, whatever Hall of Fame, she will be as a coach. I mean, she's always great with a quote, too. And she basically benched co-defensive player of the year, Alana Smith, late in the third quarter and the fourth quarter, and brought in Maria Klin-Undikova, or they call Masha, who doesn't play a heck of a lot for them, but she had four great minutes. And she said she was upset that Alana, it seems like she was upset that Alana Smith wasn't rebounding. And that's kind of been a little bit of the Achilles heel for this. Not that they really have much of one, but they can have some problems getting some defensive boards. And they can, offensively, they can go in a little bit of lull. And now with the star defender Carrington out, they're not as deep as they once were. But at the end of the day, they still won by 13.
Yeah, I remember I was out there late in the regular season, and Cheryl was talking about rebounding. And she got asked a question about it. Have they improved? And she said, well, okay, yes, a little, but it's a constant thing and a work in progress. And she talked about they showed the players clips of where they defended like crazy for, you know, throughout the shot clock, and then they give up an offensive rebound, and then it happened again. So it was their first effort was great. It's just they weren't getting the rebounds. And so I think that's a constant point of emphasis for them, because, of course, when you look at it, they're going to score. They got a variety of scores, right? I mean, they're not just depending on one play. They're going to defend. I mean, that's kind of who they are. I think the key for them to win the championship is rebounding. I think they wound up out-rebounding Phoenix yesterday, but if they can hold their own on the boards, they are good enough to win the championship.
They are, and I always said that Courtney Williams, who's kind of up and down a little bit, you know, Cheryl, I think, coaches her really hard, and Courtney, mm-hmm. Courtney's such a talent, but Courtney Williams is the exact kind of point guard the Timberwolves need. They need the male version of Courtney Williams, you know, whether, you know, because she can score, but she's also can pass. She's electric. She plays with the. That's the prototype that, you know, that maybe Dillingham can learn from her, because and Dillingham does seem to have some of those characteristics. He likes to shoot. He can play fast. Yeah. He's just so young and raw that he's not there yet. But there's some hope there. How about Nafisa Collier and Asia Wilson? And I broke this down on my Sunday show, and I said, you know. And we talked about it a little bit earlier today as well. As much as we all love Fee, yesterday Asia Wilson didn't play well, and the Aces got beat badly at home. So that's kind of maybe they had a MVP hangover after having a party or something. But I don't have a problem with Asia Wilson getting it, simply because Fee played 33 games, and and Asia played 40, and their numbers are almost identical. Their impacts on their team are identical. They're both great. They both deserve it. Whoever didn't get it, there's got to be. I just think that was the difference between what would otherwise was a 50-50 call.
Well, I do think it was that, you know, I can't get inside the head of voters, but if I was guessing, I think they may have penalized Nafisa for not, you know, playing as many games that she had the injury. Well, she wound up missing 11 games.
So that's a quarter of the games.
Yeah, and also, you know, I mean, Asia's. She's done it, right? She's been it three times. So it's just, and I think the way they finished, that team finished, probably was fresh, top of mind, even though the Lynx by far had, you know, the best record. So, yeah, you know, I'm sure it's disappointing for Collier considering the historic season that, you know, she had in the Lynx, obviously. But if I'm guessing, I would kind of guess that the games that she missed probably factored into some people's decision making.
And I'm not a great WNBA mind, but the Fever lose like five players, including Caitlin Clark, and they're now in the semifinals. They're kind of like their male brethren. No one took the Indiana Pacers seriously last year, and they got all the way to the Final Four as well. So that's kind of amazing to me. I wonder why that's. Do you have any insight as to why that would be the case?
I don't know that. I haven't followed them that closely to know like what sparked, you know, when she went out, what sparked their turnaround. But it's nice, though. It's fun to see that, you know, a team, you know, so much focus is on Caitlin, and justifiably so, but that they show that, hey, that they're a good team even without her, and that, you know, they have pieces there to make a run in the playoffs.
And I'll say this, the Caitlin Clark from the logo ads are tremendous. I do really like it. Sheboygan. That cracks me up every time.
That's great.
Every time that I'm watching. Before I let you go, we're not going to talk about the Twins. We don't need to talk about that. But what about, obviously, what do we think is going on with Kirill? I mean, it's obviously his agent. It's obviously must be, you know, do you think it's the money? Do you think it's the length of the contract? And are they even talking? And what? And look, no one's panicking yet, but I'm guessing that there are some Wolves season ticket holders or Wild season ticket holders that are panicking.
Yeah, I was out there on the first day of training camp, and you know, Billy Guerin and both Kirill spoke, and it didn't really shed a whole lot of light on it. Billy said he's not going to do this publicly, but I don't know. I thought it'd be done by now, Corzo. I don't know if it's if it's term, number of years. If it's, you know, if the reports are accurate that they've offered him more than, you know, any team in league history, you know, I don't know what more there is to do. So that leads to believe me is maybe term. Does he want a shorter term? I don't know. But, you know, you obviously hope it gets done because if it's not, now all of a sudden everything about your organization that you're building towards, the narrative changes. And so we'll see if Billy can, you know, whatever gap they have to close, let's see if they get it done. But I don't think anybody thought we'd be sitting here at this point in the season after training camp starting and not be done.
Well, and the funny thing is in the NBA, when the guys sign their second deal, they all sign them. They all do because you can hardly think of anyone that didn't. I remember years ago, way under the old salary cap, Steven Jackson signed a big contract, and then the next day asked to be traded. That was a classic, and they said, "Why did you do that?" And he goes, "If they're going to offer me $12 million, I'm not dumb enough to say no." So I don't know what Kirill is. I don't know what his agent is doing. It sounds like an agent thing. I mean, and I think they're offering him so much money that you can even maybe comprehend whether he's worth that money, given the fact that he's been hurt, and he's certainly not one of the best. He's not the best player in the league. He's maybe a fourth or fifth when he's on his game. He's one of the top 10 players in the league. He's not Connor McDavid. He's not Leon Draisaitl, right? And they're offering him that kind of money.
And I am curious about it. If we're talking term, because you know, there was it 8 years reported. He's 28 years old.
Yep.
Like he's not, you know, young, early 20s. So he was asked, you know, Russo asked him at the thing. He's like, "This is a lot of money. Like, are you worried about injury and playing this out and potential of injury?" And he, you know, Kirill said he's not. He doesn't focus on that. He doesn't focus on injury. He just focuses on, you know, playing. So I don't know. I don't know anything about his agent or kind of what they're looking for. But it's an uneasy, I would say, you know, situation when you have this hanging over the team. As much as they try to say it's not a distraction and they're not panicking, they did not think that this would still be going on at this point in the season. No way.
It sounds to me like the agent is trying to make a little headway here and that Kirill's just kind of letting him do it, but I don't know either. All right, Chipper, good talking to you again, and hang in there.
All right, Corzo, see you, man.
See you, Chip Scoggins of the Star Tribune. When we come back, why I wouldn't want to be Pam Bondi.